Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers, the only dedicated lifestyle group within Random House. Potter invites readers to live well. We seek tastemakers, visionaries, and rising stars and partner them to craft books and products that define their brand while engaging, entertaining, and instructing their audience.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, I'm Grace Bonney, and you're listening to After the Jump. We're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen every Monday at noon on heritageradionetwork.org or download the podcast for free every week on iTunes. Today, I am being rejoined by my partner in crime and the managing editor of Design Sponge, Amy Azzurrito.
Hi.
For our very last somewhat solo show of the season. For the rest of the fall, I have interviews lined up, but today I wanted to take this last open space to talk about some sort of business slash personal branding issues that have been coming up, not only on Design Sponge with readers, but also things that I feel like are floating around the creative community. Mm-hmm. And for us, we decided one of the biggest issues we've been hearing about is sort of, how do you become your own brand? How do you manage that process? How do you keep an eye on it? And what are the do's and don'ts? So today we're covering that very large topic and breaking it down into easily digestible tips and some good things to remember not to do when you're trying to become your own brand.
And I'm excited for this show because I feel like I selfishly really wanted it. I need it. I've been writing for Design Sponge for a long time now, and I sort of neglect amyazzurrito.com and all of what that should be. So I actually need to go home and implement what we talk about today.
Let's teach ourselves, Amy. Let's get started.
Teach me. I want you to teach me. I'm excited.
So today we're going to start with the most important step. The first thing you need to do is come up with a personal mission statement. And I think the best way to sort of go into this is to think about something incredibly simple, which is, who are you? And obviously we all know who we are in like a really basic sense, but I think the first thing you have to decide is whether or not moving forward with your brand and your company, is this something that you're going to be purely a business? Or are you going to be just you as a person doing work? Or are you going to be a little bit of both? For me, I've always operated a little bit as both Grace Bonney and as the person behind Design Sponge. But I think a lot of people just want to come out as sort of a writer or a maker of things. Mm-hmm. They don't want to narrow themselves to one brand. And that's a really important decision to make going forward. Looking back, I wish I had kind of established myself as a name first, or maybe thought about that, because now I think it's really difficult for me to break outside of the girl from the design blog.
Right. Which, do you feel really integrated with that? Like, do people know your name always, or are they like,
no, I don't. I don't think people know that there's like a girl who started it. I think they think it's like a web of people, which it is in some sense. But I think if you want to break out of your brand, and it is a good place to be. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about like, oh, I built this brand that people know now. That's a good problem to have. But I think if you have the luxury of planning your personal brand from the start, it's good to think about whether or not you sort of want your name associated with that, or if you want to pull it back. So,
How would you have actually, like, how would you have done that in the beginning? Like, if looking back now, would you have?
I think a lot, at least in terms of bloggers, I feel like a lot of bloggers have websites where they have their name really visible on the page.
Right. Okay.
And from the beginning, I was terrified to sort of have who I was associated with that. I also had a job that didn't want me associated with the comments I was making online. So I don't think I really had a choice, but I kind of wish I had pushed
your name
a little bit more.
Okay.
So one of the biggest parts about making a mission statement, whether or not you turn this into something that gets viewed on your website or just a press release, is you need to come up with a standard bio. I get asked for this, and 8 years later, I still don't have a standard bio. So this is something that I think would be helpful to have on hand.
Right.
You're going to email this out 10 dozen times, you know, over a month if you're doing a business that's successful. So it's something that's important to think about.
Yeah. I mean, my theory about a bio is you want to keep it short and to the point, what you do, who you are. But I actually love adding in a little hobby line. So something unrelated to your professional self, but kind of tells a little. So mine always says like, does yoga and likes cats or lives with her two cats, something like that. So that my hope is that then when people see me or they read my bio, they can maybe relate to me on one of these levels that's not my design history self.
Exactly. I mean, some sort of outside hook is never a bad thing, as long as you don't have an incredibly long bio every possible side hobby that you have. Right. And I think one last thing to include in the bio, or sort of think about when you're writing a mission statement, is what you do stand for and represent. And that's going to change over the years, and that's completely okay. But when you start out, sort of putting in there the things that you appreciate, that you love, and that you're sort of all about are really important. I've seen some great examples on artists' websites where people have just a one paragraph bio will include maybe a sentence or two that say, so-and-so is a big fan of reusing materials, sourcing things locally, and making things by hand. And although those three things can maybe be a bit ubiquitous these days in the craft community, I think it's important to have some sort of message that people get, like why you're doing what you do.
Right.
So before we move on, let's talk about the don'ts, because those are always way more fun.
And we have don'ts for every category, so we're very excited about that.
Exactly. So we're going to share some do's and some don'ts for every major category. So for the don'ts, I think the most important thing for your bio and mission statement is to not make it too long.
Right.
I've seen full like 3- and 4-page Word docs that are artist statements or bios, and no one's going to read all of that. So I would say, what would you say, 2 paragraphs?
Right. I would say 2 paragraphs, and then also have prepared a 1-sentence bio. So very frequently you get asked for 1- to 2-sentence bio. And that's what people want to use.
Exactly. And then Amy mentions talking about hobbies or things like that. It's always fun to include things like that, but I think in general, don't include too many things that are irrelevant. Like, I've seen stuff where somebody talks about, you know, a really long history in archery and in baking and right. You know, things that, like, at a certain point you need to just kind of like cut it off, because those things are fun and interesting, but if they're not the majority of what you do, you don't need to have everybody know what you spend every waking hour doing.
Right, it's true. Yeah, you don't want to be like, go too quirky in the quirky, but 1 quirky thing is nice.
A little bit of quirky is fine. So the way to sort of think about this beginning step is to try to establish who you are, come up with some sort of short, maybe 2-paragraph bio. This is going to establish who you are, what you stand for, and the things that you're interested in. And this will really help you move on to the second step, which is becoming an expert. And a lot of people think when they start out, I've just started this business, I'm not an expert, I can't use that title. And when we're talking about experts, we don't mean immediately coming out as you're the best person at everything in the whole world. But the most important thing to do is know what you're good at.
Right. And I think that this is the thing that people maybe call you to get your advice on. Some people know what their thing is right away, but for others of us, it can take a little bit of time. But this is the thing where people are like, you know, asking you how you bake a cake, or what color you should paint the room. Maybe you're a color expert. Maybe you're so those kinds of things.
And don't be afraid to own the things that you're really good at, and you don't have to have a degree in them. I feel like every business owner I know, whether they're a blogger or an artist or some sort of artisanal whatever maker, they've kind of owned the fact that they're good at this one random thing, and they're not afraid of the fact that they don't have an advanced degree in it. They feel totally fine knowing what they know and owning and standing up behind that. And I think that's something that sometimes starts a business. Sometimes everybody tells you, like, hey, I love these cupcakes you make, maybe you should start a business. Whatever that thing is, people are telling you, stand behind it and don't be afraid to kind of put yourself forward as someone who knows a lot about this one topic. And chances are, if you know enough to start a business about it, you have a lot of information to share. So let's share the don'ts for expert.
Okay. Expertise. Well, one of the things that's important, I think, about being an expert is that you don't ever want to stop learning. Mm-hmm. So even if this is your field of expertise, you're always going to work to better yourself and to keep yourself there at the pinnacle of your expertness.
Exactly. It's a good point. I mean, I think that especially now with the way that the web is working, there are always classes and ways to learn more information. No matter what niche you're working in, there's always some sort of, whether it's a technological advance, some sort of social networking thing that's moved your platform forward. It's always a chance to learn more things, to sort of grow your knowledge base. And I think there are very few people who can stay a master of a niche and not continue to grow and change in some way. So that's a great idea, is to constantly keep learning in your field.
I think the other one is, don't misrepresent yourself or say that you have knowledge that you don't have or don't have yet. So it's okay. Just be honest.
I think that's something that is a huge issue people struggle with. When I used to run the BizLady series, I would have people come up to me and say, I feel like I don't know everything. And people come up to me and they'll say, oh, I'm a pattern designer. And they'll ask me 10 different questions about pattern design. And if I don't know half of them, I feel like I'm somehow a failure, or I feel like I'm a fraud. And that's fine. You don't have to be everything to everyone. And I think that's something you feel like you get pushed into when you are the face of a business, is that you somehow must know every answer to every question related to your field. I certainly don't know everything everything about home or lifestyle design. And that's why I hired other people to be experts in other categories. And there's nothing wrong in admitting that you're really great at one or two things, and the other things you're going to call in other people for. That's completely fine. And no one's going to think less of you. They will think less of you if you say that you know exactly how to do everything, and then you fall on your face.
Right. It's like the person who, when you're, you know, you're on the street and you're like, do you know how to get to, and they like point you in the wrong direction. And you're always like, why didn't they just say they didn't know? Like, it's, that's fine. I would have asked someone else.
Exactly. So I think it's important to remember that there's no weakness in sort of being honestly who you are, being authentic about it, and then really just kind of owning the things you don't know and accepting that that's something that might make you more relatable. So don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. So the next thing we want to talk about are logistics. The nice thing about all these logistics is they're incredibly easy to accomplish right off the bat. The first one we want to talk about are sort of the basics of reserving your name for social media. So if you're starting your own brand, whether or not you are planning to use your full name as part of it, assume that hopefully things will work out perfectly and your name will be associated with your brand. It will be a big success, and that everyone is going to want to try to steal your name. So the first thing you're going to want to do is register your name and your brand name on Facebook, on Twitter, your URLs, relevant shops like an Etsy link, Flickr, YouTube. Register both of those things. And it's going to cost you a little bit of money every year to keep like a URL or a shop name, things like that. But they are well worth it, because I learned the hard way that I didn't register designsponge.com when I started, because I thought, who in the heck is going to want to register anything with sponge at the end of the title? But I ended up fighting for 5 years with like a Korean design firm to get that name back. And so just go ahead and register it off the bat. It's going to seem crazy, but it will completely be worth it.
Did you register GraceBonnie.com?
I did. I felt really like conceited doing that. And it feels gross sometimes. Like, why would anyone want your name? Why would you ever want your own name on a website? That's how I feel, at least. But it would be even weirder to feel like there was someone taking it or sitting on it, or that if things did really well, that somewhere down the line, someone could use that name for something I didn't want associated with my brand or a personal brand. So I think
you did it right away.
Yeah, it's like spend the $20 to buy the URL, and then you can
and set it up to automatically renew. I know so many people who get stuck there. You have to have it automatically renewed,
and
so you don't.
It doesn't matter how huge your business is. If you have even a moderate amount of success, there will be horrible spam companies that just kind of sit and wait for things like that to open. So they'll do a thing where they go to GoDaddy and say, "We want all of these design related URLs." They'll sign up to sort of say, "Buy this if the user owner like." The ownership lapses. And I've had that happen with friends who don't have automatic things set up. There's like a 1 or 2 day thing where it lapses and they forget to sign up, and then some hosting website grabs it and you have to pay for your own domain. It's a hassle. Try to stay out of that one. So the don'ts of logistics. For me, one of the things that drives me nuts is sort of an over branding or an overly personalized way of doing websites, Facebook, URL, all of that sort of stuff. I've seen examples of people who kind of find a way to shove their face into everything they do. And while it can be good to have yourself, like your appearance, your face actually associated with what you do, if that's something you decide, I think if you're a product designer or somebody who's sharing advice and it really isn't all about you, to not have your photograph in everything. I don't think people need to see your face every time they load something if what you do isn't literally about your personal life all the time.
I actually love Amy Merrick's homepage, where you load in these beautiful flowers. And I think it really describes what she does, and you don't have to see her holding flowers to sort of get that idea.
Exactly. Well, I mean, all of these logistics we're talking about with reserving URLs, this is putting your sort of business face forward. And if your business isn't about your personal life 24/7, if you're a florist or a product designer or a baker, what you do should really lead the way people come into your business. Mm-hmm. So if you're a baker and the first thing I load when I see your site is a picture of you like laying on a couch, that doesn't really express to me that this is like an amazing artisanal baker.
Right. You're cute, but
exactly. Cute girl. What does she do?
Right. Exactly.
So think about those things. And also, when you're reserving these logistics, you don't have to have a use for them yet. You don't have to set up a Facebook page. You don't have to actually have anything on them. Just go ahead and reserve them. So don't feel like just because you have a YouTube account, Flickr page, all that stuff set up, you can just put a placeholder there and say, for more information, visit whatever your business page is. So don't feel like you have to overuse those things. And if you feel like you'll never have a Facebook page, you'll never use a Twitter account, still reserve it, because somebody else will take it.
Right.
So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the beast that is self-promotion, what to do right and what to do wrong.
Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers. This week's featured book is The Hand-Built Home by Anna White. Create a beautiful modern home with one-of-a-kind DIY furniture. Beds, organizers, Adirondack chairs, a play table, and more. It's easy to build inexpensive quality furnishings with this indispensable collection of woodworking projects from Anna White, the popular blogger who's inspired millions of homemakers with her stylish furniture plans and DIY spirit. As a young mom on a tight budget, Anna learned to make her own well-designed pieces inspired by the styles in her favorite stores, saving thousands of dollars in the process. Now, in this reference for woodworkers of all skill levels, Anna shares everything she has learned along the way. Inside the hand-built home, you'll find plans for 34 versatile furniture projects for every room in your house, from beginner-friendly home accessories to sturdy tables, a media center, kids' items, and storage solutions. Comprehensive information on using off-the-shelf lumber and basic equipment. Almost every project can be made with a drill, a saw, and some hand tools. Easy-to-follow instructions, costs, and time estimates to guide even the most amateur of carpenters through any project. You don't need to be physically tough or super strong to make your own furniture, and it's okay if you don't know that a 2x4 actually doesn't measure to 2x4 inches. All you need is the determination to create a better home for yourself or your family, and the confidence to say, "I can build that." The Hand-Built Home by Anna White. Available wherever books are sold.
Hey, welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today we're coming to you live from Roberta's. I'm here with Amy Azzurrito, the managing editor of Design Sponge, and we're talking about becoming your brand, mostly becoming a personal brand. Before the break, we talked about establishing a mission statement, becoming an expert, and really owning that, and the logistics of setting up your personal brand. The next thing we're going to talk about, I think, is the stickiest issue for me, and that is self-promotion. And I want to start with the elevator pitch. And whether or not you've ever heard of this, an elevator pitch is basically a shortened version of how to tell somebody what you do. And imagine telling someone in an elevator. You have 1 or 2 minutes to do it. You have to concisely explain what you do. And it's the greatest way to think about a short press release, because a lot of people, it can be really easy to ramble.
Have you ever had to do this before? Like, I've never actually had to give an elevator pitch.
You will.
But I'm very excited about it.
You have a book coming out. You're going to have to give a million elevator pitches. And the good thing is you want your business to be in a place where you have to give a lot of these. And I hate the word pitch, because it makes it sound like you're going to be overly promotional. But if you're running your own business and you're being your own brand, you're going to have to explain what you do. And it can be especially awkward if you do something that maybe people aren't familiar with. If you're a blogger, or if you're someone who has a job that's outside of a traditional box, there can be this like need to defend and explain what you do. But I think the most important thing to do is to carry that confidence you had from the mission statement into an explanation. I like to think of it as, I have like a one sentence version of what I do, which is, I run a design site. Because I find that if you say the word blog, people kind of associate you with whatever they associate the word blog with.
16-year-old.
You never know. For some people, that can be like all they know is the Drudge Report or something that sounds really catty. And so I just say website. And then if they're interested, I'll explain more. And I'll take it the next level and say that we write about lifestyle. And anything you can do in a house, we write about.
Right.
So for me, that's my second
line.
That's
a good one.
Because I think a lot of people associate different things with what goes on inside of a home. So I think if you have like 3 different levels of what you say, like the really basic thing, like, oh, I'm a ceramicist. And if someone's like, oh, really? What do you do? You can say like, oh, I specialize in tabletop goods. I make things like mugs and pitchers and plates. And then if they're curious about more, you can say, oh, well, I run a studio in Brooklyn and I try to make everything by hand. And I'm really influenced by Japanese glazes. So I would think about 3 levels.
Oh, okay.
And beyond that, I think sometimes things get too detailed for a short pitch.
Right.
But it sets it up enough that somebody kind of gets the general idea of what you do.
I always think a pitch means like you're wanting something, like, and then your pitch is like, so fund my product line, you know, but it's not really. That's why it feels gross, maybe.
It should really be about explaining what you do. You should be proud of what you do. Mm-hmm. And I think if you love what you do and you're proud of the things you produce or work on, you shouldn't have to sell them to someone. I feel that way about any promotion. I feel like if the work is good and you're proud of what you do, your enthusiasm about what you do and your excitement about what you make should really be enough to kind of hook people in. You shouldn't need some catchy phrase. I loathe when people have kind of a really gimmicky catchphrase that's like, I can't even think of one offhand without making it too obvious who it is. But there are a lot of people who come up with like a need to have a rhyming sentence, where you don't have to do that. You don't have to like use some buzzword. those things I feel like immediately put you into this category of like salesman. Nobody likes to be pitched.
No, that's why it's a scary sort of thing. It's always felt scary to me.
Yeah, like, I've always thought about like, how would you introduce yourself at a cocktail party?
Right.
That's what it is. And if you can tell that somebody's interested in what you do, then you can kind of pull them in a little bit further. But I think that there's nothing better for your business than being kind of an enthusiastic but respectful pitch person. Because if someone likes you and feels comfortable with you, they're going to call you back. If they feel like you're shoving a business card into their pocket every time they talk to you, they're not going to want to be around you as much. And there is like a, there's a very delicate balance between people who get ahead from promoting really aggressively because it works. I mean, every niche has a couple people who, because they are everywhere and constantly handing out business cards, they do well. But I think the good thing to remember is that like consistency in terms of what you produce, whether it's content or a product, that's always going to have greater longevity than the person who just happens to be at every event.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, it's true. That actually makes me feel better about the the elevator pitch. I need to work on
that. And I think one thing that's helpful for an elevator pitch, and a lot of people feel awkward describing what they do, is to kind of think about why you're different. Why is your business or why is your brand different than everyone else in the niche? And that's something that might change over the years. For me, that's something that I'm constantly struggling to redefine or understand for myself. But when you know that, when you know why the woodworking you do is different, better, more unique than the others in the niche, that's what you should be talking about. If you're doing something by hand or using a technique that other people aren't using or working with materials that other people don't use, that's your selling point.
Right.
And one thing that sort of stems off of that is logo design, blog design, collaterals. All those things that you put out there that have your name on them or your business name are really just an extension of that. And you wouldn't want to walk out to an important meeting wearing sweatpants, so you don't want a business card or a logo or a website that's the equivalent of that. So I think this is one thing that it's important.
Yeah, my website's wearing sweatpants right now. With like really baggy elastic. Please, nobody go to amyasrito.com and tell it has clothes.
You know,
and
everyone's going to go to
No, don't, please. I'm like not even joking. Do not go there. So it's like embarrassing.
It's important. And that's, you know, everybody has that moment where like one aspect of your business is struggling. Everyone has that. I'm always embarrassed about like the landing pages on Design Sponge have issues. So there are things that you don't have to have perfect all the time, but you want to keep them at a base level of not being embarrassing.
Right.
And they need to be consistent with what you do. So when you're thinking about having a business card or a press release that you hand out to people or a press kit or a logo, these are places to invest in your business. Because I think it's way more important for someone to look at a card, to look at a website and get your style or get what you do, because that kind of extends your elevator pitch. Like if you load someone's website and it looks like their style or you get the right
I'm
vibe.
So embarrassed right now.
Everyone thinks you love sweatpants and blocks without backgrounds. Those things are they're worth spending money on. I think it can be scary, but it really is a great extension of what you do. So let's talk about the don'ts for self-promotion.
Well, we had don't talk too much. So if it's an elevator, you're waiting for a floor. So it shouldn't be too lengthy. I like don't make it about you all the time. So sometimes it's you really want to you're there to support someone else. It's not it's not necessarily about you and your business.
Yeah, and you can be the face of a business without talking about yourself all the time. Like in my elevator pitch, I don't only talk about what I do at the site. I talk about the writers that, we work with and all of the different topics that they cover. So I think it's important not to constantly make yourself the center of things, but to maybe also as part of your pitch, find a way to connect what you do to the person you're talking to. So if I run a lifestyle site and I'm introducing myself to someone who's a florist or a gardener, I might talk about, oh, you know how you specialize in seasonal flowers. We talk about that too. And find a way to kind of like pull them into what you do without constantly making it me.
Don't try to seem too overly fancy or fabulous.
That happens all the time. And it's a very slippery slope because when you put yourself out there, it can be tempting to think, I've got to seem like this perfect business
person. You want
to
put your best face forward. You don't want people to see you in sweatpants.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with wanting to put your best foot forward, but don't put a foot forward. This is a terrible analogy, but I'm gonna make it. Like, don't put your foot out there with a fancy like don't say you wear Manolo Blahniks if you don't wear Manolo Blahniks.
Right.
If you're somebody like me who wears flip-flops every day, even though it's 40 degrees outside, like be who you are, own who you are. There's a real value in being relatable. And I think people forget that people can latch on to a brand or a personality because of its relatability as much as they can latch on to it for its sort of aspirational qualities. Mm-hmm. So maybe if you are Martha Stewart, own your Connecticutness, and that's right, what
she
you
does.
Are. But if
and it
you're
works.
Yeah, and that works for you, be who you are. But if you're somebody who works from home and doesn't dress up and kind of enjoys having a laid back lifestyle, it's totally okay to put that out there as the face of your business, as long as it's not overly schlubby. Mm-hmm. But don't be afraid to be who you are. There's a real value and benefit to that. And the last don't for me is don't always be promoting. I think sometimes you've got to know when it's your day and when it's not your day.
Right.
And it's okay to hand out a business card now and then, but you don't want to be the person who's constantly shoving
don't
your
do it at someone's
card.
Wedding.
Exactly. Exactly. If you're there for a friend, don't make everything about you and your business. All right. The next thing we want to talk about really quickly is being seen. It's great to promote yourself online, but it's also really important to be at events and to be at relevant, you know, community activities for things related to your brand. And I think for me, the most important thing to think about here is the importance of appearance. I hate this. I hate this about running a business that like you need to look a certain way or you need to dress up. You don't have to dress up, but I've begrudgingly admitted over the years that what you look like in some sense contributes to what people think about you. And just in the same way that we just talked about not being overly fancy, I think there is a value to sort of being pulled together and cleaned up. And I think people want to see some sort of consistency between your brand and what you look like in person.
Your personal style.
Exactly. This doesn't mean you have to spend a bunch of money on clothes, but I always like the idea of having like 3 or 4 things in your closet.
Yeah, we do this. We wear the same thing over and over.
But that, it's consistency. It's investing in a few things that really allow you to feel pulled together quickly. And when you feel pulled together, you're confident, you feel calm, and you're best able to represent your business. Amy and I went on the 30 plus city book tour last fall, and we each invested in a couple, literally only like 3 or 4 things, like a couple dresses and blazers that we wore over and over and over again. But they took the worry of thinking about what you're going to look like, what you're going to wear, out of the equation completely.
You wore this green dress over and over and
I'll never
over.
Wear it again. You really have to sort of think about how you're going to make your appearance just at the very base level pulled together. Because if you're wearing, I mean, I don't know who wears sweatpants. I keep saying sweatpants. But if you're kind of like always.
Sometimes they're cute.
Yeah. If you're always wearing a sweatshirt to events, that's clearly not going to be the best way to promote yourself. So just think about that. And the only don't I have for this section is to not like overly dress up. And we talked about that before. But I think sometimes people, it's really easy to think that you have to be like a perfect version of yourself. And you don't. You really just need to be you with all the kind of edges rounded off if possible. Because I think you want to be relatable, but you want to stay true to yourself at the same time. So the last thing we want to talk about today is, I think, the most important thing when you've kind of got things set up, which is being consistent and being authentic.
Mm-hmm. This is, I think when we think about this, we think about, really editing down, curating maybe is a better word, to sort of figure out who you are. And this goes back to the mission statement, kind of whittling away and not presenting everything. So you're not like the baker and the decorator and that, I mean, you might eventually get to the place where you are more Martha Stewart did it, but she started being the baker and the entertainer. And then she progressed to sort of taking on these other roles, but really being editing.
Well, it's hard to absorb a brand when that brand feels like it does everything.
Right.
So if you're a ceramicist, I mean, like, let's break down a couple different categories. I think if you're a maker, if you're a painter, if you're a ceramicist, if you're a woodworker, if you have a website where every possible style you've ever done from college all the way up to like the first 5 years of your business are shown, the quality of that work might be iffy, or it might be drastically different. And while it's nice to see what you did in college, if it doesn't best represent what you do now, I think it's easier to streamline that process and show people the best of what you've been doing recently. And I think sometimes there feels like this pressure to have a million examples of what you do. You don't need to do that. Even if you're somebody who's a writer and you want to include like kind of a clip reel of what you've written and what you do, you don't need to show everything you've ever done. You only need to show the best examples of what you done, of what you have done. And the same thing goes for sort of taking yourself too seriously. I think a lot of times when they think about consistency and authenticity, like everything gets analyzed as, is this a perfect example of that? Just kind of accept the fact that like sometimes you're going to make mistakes, sometimes you're going to write things or produce things that don't work out. Everybody does that. It's totally okay. You can edit that out of your brand. You can edit that out of your pitch if you want to. But I think accepting inconsistencies over time that they sometimes happen to everybody is totally fine. So before we go, let's talk about the sort of don'ts for being consistent and being authentic?
Don't be anyone you're not, I guess, is our biggest don't for that.
Yeah, I think it's really nice. I mean, we've worked with people who are makers and brand people for the last almost 10 years. And I think the people that I remember the most over the last decade are the people who really stay true to who they are. And even if they change, there's a thread that stays throughout their work or throughout their writing that is always true to sort of their central beliefs and core pieces of who they are. And I think one thing that's great, and this is really important to staying consistent, is not oversharing or being overly negative. And I think that that can be easy when you have a personal brand, because what you think as a person becomes a part of the things you express. Right. But if you're someone who's constantly talking about every detail of your life or constantly complaining about things, that can creep in as a consistency in your brand. And you do not want to be associated as the brand that's always complaining about something or always calling somebody out. They might seem fun in the moment, but in the long term, nobody wants to be that brand. So before we go, I'm going to wrap up the quick points we gave you. We talked about creating a mission statement. The most important thing is to figure out what makes you different and what are the things you really stand for. And then we talked about becoming an expert. If you don't take anything else today, it's really kind of like own the things you're good at and don't feel bad about the things that aren't in your sort of range of specialties. It's totally okay to be great at one thing and owned up and stand behind it. And in order to really get that out there, you need to reserve all of the various social media and URLs associated with both your business name and your personal name and make sure that you have a consistent appearance for those. That's going to come through when you give people an elevator pitch. Make sure you know 1 to 3 sentences of the best way to describe what you do in a simple way that doesn't feel overly promotional. And then get yourself out there. Have people to give your elevator pitch to. It's important to get those things out there. And then also be consistent and be authentic. Really stand up for who you are and what you believe, and don't be afraid to sort of let that change over the years.
So I'm going to go home and work on my website quickly.
So check out Amy Azzurrito in a couple weeks.
Yeah, not now.
Not right now. But thanks so much to everybody for listening. We'll be back next Monday with a new interview, and good luck with your pitches.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.